Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph, six lines down. The Gemara yesterday was trying to understand the position of Beit Hillel within the Mishnah as to why they think there's a problem with the Beitza Shenolda B'Yom Tov. We had four opinions yesterday as to why there's a problem with the Beitza Shenolda B'Yom Tov. First opinion was proffered by Rav Nachman, who says that it was a Tarnagolet Omedet the Gadel Beitzim. It was a chicken whose designation was to lay eggs, and therefore it's mukseh. And the egg that comes out of it is therefore mukseh. The Gemara challenged Rav Nachman and ended with the final challenge it had with Rav Nachman, which is, why doesn't Beit Hillel Beit Shammai argue about Tarnagolet Ubeitzata? He Ubeitzata. Why are they only arguing about the egg? The chicken has the same problem. So that was Rav Nachman's position. The second position that he had was Rabbah. Rabbah, who believes in what we call Hachono de Rabbah, that something that was Nigmar Bidei Shemayim has to be finished on a Yom Chol, and since an egg is always finished the day prior to when it is laid, therefore we're worried about a case where you have an adjacency between Yom Tov and Shabbat, and a plain Yom Tov and a plain Shabbat, where goes there Otu, a case where you have that adjacency. The last two opinions were those of Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yitzchak. Rav Yosef says that it's gzera mishum perot hanoshrim, gzera because of fruits that detach from the tree on Shabbat. And Rav Yitzchak says it's a gzera mishum mashkim shezavu. It's a gzera of skita, problem that if liquids come out by themselves naturally from fruits on Shabbat, you may not use those liquids because we're afraid if you do use those liquids, then you'll come to actually do skita, you actually squeeze out the liquids. Gemara challenged that and said, we're already dealing with the gzeira. You're going to add on another gzeira on top of it. Gemara in both instances answered that it's chad gzeira. This was part of the original gzeira. What the Gemara is going to discuss now is four opinions. Why do the other three not accept the opinion of the fourth individual? So it's going to go through them one by one. So the Gemara says, kulu k'Rav Nachman lo amre. Nobody subscribes to Rav Nachman's position, ki koshian. Because of the question that the Gemara ended up with, which was, why doesn't the Mishnah say he ubeitzata instead of simply beitzata? It could have argued about both issues. Yesterday we noted in the Tosafot that even though the Gemara doesn't ask this all over the place, here it was simple to add in the chicken, just add in the word he, and all of a sudden you have both cases in there. The Gemara indicates that it should have done that if Rav Nachman was correct. Karabo nami lo amre. They don't subscribe to Rabbo's position because achano leitlahu. They don't have this hachono de Rabbo. Chana de Rabba is premised on a number of items. In Rashi especially, it's premised on the fact that Muksa is de Oraita, which is a big Chiddush. But even without that Chiddush of Muksa de Oraita, Chana de Rabba makes an assumption that Vaya B'Yom HaShishi says that there is a requirement to prepare on a Yom Chol for Yom Tov, on a Yom Chol for Shabbat, and that the Torah prescribes that necessity for you to have the meals that are done on Shabbat prepared beforehand. And the next step is that that applies to Bidei Shemaim, something that's finished out of your control, that also has a requirement that it be finished the day before. And the third assumption is that an egg laid today was finished yesterday. So those are all three assumptions in Rabbah's position, which you could argue on any one of those assumptions made in Rabbah's position. So Rashi asked that yesterday. Yeah, on Sunday is not chashuv. So it's only a meal that's chashuv that requires preparation. So the meal on Sunday, it's not chashuv, so therefore it doesn't require preparation. It's not hachana because you didn't do anything. It happened by itself. It happened in memela. So there's no problem. An egg that's laid on Sunday doesn't have a problem of hachana because you didn't prepare it on Shabbat. It happened by itself. It doesn't have a problem of hachana memela where you'd have to designate it because the meal on Sunday is not chashuv enough that you have to actively prepare it. So that's why Rashi mentioned that yesterday, why on Sunday you don't have to worry about an egg that is laid on Sunday, even though it was finished on Shabbat. Ella, Rav Yosef, my time alomar could Rav Yitzchak. So really, the real question is between Rav Yosef and Rav Yitzchak, who both say it's a gzeira, why did they choose the gzeira that they chose? So, Amar lecha, beitza uchla, uperot uchla. An egg is food, perot, fruits are food, lafuge mashkim delav uchla. It comes to exclude the case of mashkim. We're not going to say it's a gzera mishum mashkim shezavu because an egg is a solid item, fruit are a solid item, so it makes more sense to compare it inside of a gzera with solid items. That would be the case of shema yitlosh. That's why his gzera is associated with that. Rabbi Yitzchak, my time alone, Mark Rabbi Yosef. Why doesn't Rabbi Yitzchak subscribe to that position of Rabbi Yosef that it's a problem of Gzeir Hashem Yitlosh? Melchat Beitza Blu'a. Beitza is covered inside the chicken. Umashkim Blu'im. And so is liquids. Liquids are contained within inside of the fruit. Lafuke Perot, Demiglu B'Kaimu. Fruits which are exposed. They're out in the open. So he says the comparison is better with regards to Mashkim, because they have the same traits, in the sense that, yes, you have two items, one's eaten, one's drink, but nevertheless, they're both contained inside of something else. The eggs contained inside of the chicken, the liquids are contained inside of the fruit itself, and therefore it's more comparable. Now Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan savar gzeira mishum mashkim shizavu. Rabbi Yochanan also thinks, along the lines of Rabbi Yitzchak, that it's a problem of mashkim shizavu, because the Rabbi Yochanan Rami, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yochanan queries or sets up this problem between two shitot of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tano. Mishani, and he answered it. It's not. We have a Mishnah. Ein sochatim et peirot, lotzi mehen mashkim. You're not allowed to squeeze fruits in order to take liquids out of them. That's chita. Vim yatsu me'atzman. If they drip by themselves, asurin. Then it's still asur. That's the gzera of mashkim shizavu. This is the gzera, because here they came out by themselves. You didn't do anything. You should be able to drink them. There's really not nolad. There's a small aspect of nolad, but there's not real nolad over here, because the liquids existed. They were just inside of the fruit. So why can't you drink them? Is because we're afraid if we allow you to drink these liquids, you're going to come and squeeze more out of the fruit in order to get the liquids out. If your intent with these fruits, for instance, grapes, you pick the grapes to eat these grapes. You're not going to squeeze the grapes for their grape juice, but rather to eat them. In that instance, when the juice comes out of the grapes, you don't want that. That's not your intent, and it's not helpful to you at all. So Rabbi Yehuda suggests, in that case, something that emanates from a fruit that you intend to eat, then it's mutar. Because you're not going to come and squeeze more out of the fruit, because it's not what you want. You want to eat the fruit, you don't want to squeeze the fruit for its liquid. Vim lo mashkim, on the other hand, if these fruits are designated for squeezing to make the juice out of them, hayotze mehen asur, because that's the case where we're going to be afraid. If we let you drink it now, you're going to continue to squeeze it to get more out of it. Alma, kol ochlim de Rabbi Yehuda, uchla de ifratu. The first assumption, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is that any food item is considered to be uchla de ifrat. That was something we saw in the beginning of the Masechta as well, which is that it's an extension of the original item. It's considered as if a piece of the original item fell away. So here, where the liquids come out of an ochel, you wanted to eat these grapes. Liquid that emanates from those grapes by itself, that leaches from the grapes, that liquid is considered to be ochel for Rabbi Yehuda, because you have a food item, and the liquid that emanates from it is also a food item, because it's just a piece of the original item falling away. That's why Rabbi Yehuda is willing to be matir in a case where you collected the fruits for achila, because it's not considered to be mukse. It's not a problem of you're going to go squeeze more out, because I have one piece of food, another piece of food. If you eat a piece of food, we're not afraid that you're going to squeeze something else out because you eat a piece of food. The food is here. It's designated as food. It's considered food because it came off or came away from the original fruit. So that's number one. Number two is, Rabbi Yehuda says, in that case, there's no reason for a gzeira. Since the whole reason you want these fruits is for achila, therefore I'm not going to penalize you and say, don't drink it, because that drink is not going to lead you to do something that's wrong afterwards, to squeeze more out of it, because that's counter to your intent for these fruits. And then we challenged it from another Mishnah. This is Rabbi Yochanan's question, where he challenges Rabbi Yehuda's position from another Mishnah, which is Oda Amar Rabbi Yehuda. This is in Eruvin with regards to Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Yehuda believes that they are shtei kedushot, that they're not considered to be kedusha achad, but rather shtei kedushot. Therefore, he treats them like any other Yom Tov, which is Matne Adam al Kalkalasho Perot b'Yom Tov Rishon v'Ochla b'Sheni. Person can conditionally remove Trumot and Masrot from a basket of fruits on Yom Tov Rishon and then eat them on Yom Tov Sheni. What he will do is, on the first day of Yom Tov, he will come along, separate out the Trumot and Masrot, and say, if today is a weekday, then these fruits that I pulled aside are Trumot and Masrot on the main body of fruits that are in this basket. But if it's Yom Tov today, I've done nothing. On the second day, he repeats this. takes off the same fruits, obviously. He has to designate or delineate those fruits. So he takes off the same ones on the second day, takes off those fruits and says again, if today is Yom Tov, I'm not doing anything. If yesterday was Yom Tov, then today I'm taking these off as Trumot Masrot, off the, which is remaining in the basket, and then he can eat it. Because Mimonov Shach, he took off Trumot Masrot, not on Yom Tov. There's a restriction against taking off Trumot Masrot on Yom Tov, which is a Mishnah we'll see later on in Masechet Beitzah. But to avoid that problem, he basically conditionally removes the Trumot Masrot. And Mimonov Shach, he ended up on one day that was not Yom Tov. If the first day was Yom Tov, then his second day Hafrasha worked. If the second day was Yom Tov, then his first day of Hafrasha worked, and therefore he can eat them on the second day. V'chein, beitzah shenolda b'rishon, te'achel b'sheni. A beitzah that was born on the first day can be eaten on the second day. B'sheni in b'rishon no. So this is the deal of that Rabbi Yochanan makes. On the second day, yes, but on the first day, no. So what you have here again is a mimonov shach. When the beitzah is born on the first day, can't eat it. Second day, I can eat it because either the Yom Tov Rishon was Chol, and then it made no difference, and then you could eat it on the second day. Or the first day was Yom Tov, so it was born on Yom Tov, but the second day is Chol. And you can eat something that was laid on Yom Tov, you can eat it on the day afterwards, on the Yom Chol. So Mimonov Shach, you're able to eat it. Now, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan brought this Mishnah as a challenge to the previous statement of Rabbi Yehuda means that he sees a parallel between Beitzah Shenolda and the case of Mashkim Shezavu. What? He's saying here there's a stira in Shittat Rabbi Yehuda. What stira do you see in Shittat Rabbi Yehuda? One case is talking about eggs and peirot in a basket. The other one's talking about Mashkim Shezavu. Why is that a stira in position of Rabbi Yehuda? Elaim Kain, Rabbi Yochanan believes that the problem of Beitzah Shenolda B'Yom Tov is Mashkim Shezavu. If that's the case, then we have a stira in Rabbi Yehuda. In the previous instance, Rabbi Yehuda said that Mashkim Shezavu is a problem if it's for Mashkim. It's not a problem if it's for Ochel. So say the same thing over here. Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda say by the guards to a Beitzah that no davar is shown? You can eat it on the second day, not on the first day. Where is that distinction between Ochel versus Mashkim? If it's for Ochel, then why not on the first day can't you eat the egg? Why is the egg laid on the first day problematic? It came from Ochel, and therefore the egg that came out should be mutar. And why do we say it's a gzera mishum mashkim shezavu? Mashkim shezavu is only relevant when it's in liquid that's coming out of something that you're going to intend to use as a liquid. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan has to come up with an answer, and he says, Umeshani, Rabbi Yochanan mukhlefet ashita. He flips the positions in the Mishnah. Rashi says over here, which one does he flip? He flips the positions in the first one. Shita the Mishnah de Ein Sochatim. The Mishnah from Ein Sochatim, he flips the position between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. In order to have Rabbi Yehuda be consistent in his position that Mashkim Shezavu is always problematic. And that's why here by the Beitzah Shenolda, he says it's problematic and you can only have it on the second day, not on the first day. Tosafot brings an opinion that flips the second Mishnah in order to accomplish the answer. Truthfully, it's easier to read it when you flip the first Mishnah because of the subsequent Gemara, but Tosafot does have a way to read the Gemara that continues afterwards, even if you flip the second Mishnah. The fact that he says that these two Mishnayot have anything to do with each other, it must be because they come for the same reason, which is Mashkim Shezavu. Ravina Amar, Lolam Lo Tipuch. Don't flip the Mishnayot. Yehuda Divrehem Dirabanan Kamar Luhu. This is Rabbi Yehuda in the position of the Rabbanan. Lididi, Rabbi Yehuda says, Afilu berishon nami sharia. On the first day, it's also mutar. Do ochla de ifratu. Because it's ochel that's separated away from another piece of ochel, which we saw before Rabbi Yehuda believes, is totally mutar. So he says, as far as I'm concerned, you could have this egg that was laid on the first day of Yom Tov, you could eat it that day. Ela lididi. Oh, but according to you, Rabbanan, don't think ochla de ifratu. Nevertheless, odoli, at least agree to me, mia de b'sheni sharia, on the second day that it's mutar, de shtei kiddushotein, because your own tov of Rosh Hashanah is two kiddushot. I mean, mon of shach, one of the days is chol, so either the egg was laid on chol, or if it was laid on yom tov, the next day is chol, so you should be able to eat it. V'amri lei rabbanan, lo. Rabbanan responds, say, no, kiddusha achati, it's really one kiddusha. We'll get to this further on in Beitza as well, which is this machloket about Rosh Hashanah as to whether it's shtei kedushot or kedusha achat. Shtei kedushot because it's a safek like any other yom tov. That's one possibility. Or Kedusha Achari derives from the fact that there's a gzera or takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, even bizman Beit HaMikdash. If the Edim came in a mincha ulamala, they came late in the day, they would keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, even though the first day was really Rosh Hashanah, because the Edim came on that day. Nevertheless, they would postpone Rosh Hashanah to the second day. So if that's the case, the takana makes it that it's really Kedusha Achat, because it's not a safek, we're not keeping it a safek, we're keeping it a mitzad takana. And therefore it becomes or takes on this character of Kedusha Achat. So the Chachamim disagree with them and say that it's Kedusha Achat, not Shtei Kedushot. So they actually argue on two levels. First of all, they argue about the fact whether Uchla de Ifratu, whether Ochel that separates away from another Ochel is classified as Ochel or not. That's the argument in the Mishnah of Ein Sochatin. The Mishnah that tells about liquids that emanate or leach from Ochel, grapes that you're going to eat, really says Mutar, because it's Ochel different. It's Ochel that broke away from another piece of Ochel. Chamim say it's a sur because it's a liquid. Liquids are always a surim. We don't say Ochel differatu. Then in the next Mishnah, with regards to the egg that is laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, for me, on the first day it's fine because that's Ochel that came from Ochel. No problem. For you guys, I understand from the Mishnah in Ein Sochatin that you don't subscribe to Ochel differatu. So I understand that on the first day you wouldn't let him eat it. But at least on the second day, let him eat this egg that was laid on the first day because Shtei Kedushot. Chamim argue, no, it's not Shtei Kedushot, it's Kedusha Achat. So those are the two things that they argue about, the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. And that's why it's not flipped. Hashita is not flipped in the case by Rosh Hashanah and Eruvin, because he's not speaking about his own opinion. He's trying to convince the Chachamim as to his position. And the Chachamim reject it. Now, Ravina, Breid Rav Ula Amar, Hocha b'tarnagolat omedet de gedel beitzim. You get all confused here. The reason for the egg being asur on the first day is even according to Rabbi Yehuda, is Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei ditle muksim. Rabbi Yehuda the shita to believes in muksim, and over here we have a chicken that is designated to lay eggs. That means the chicken is muksim. The egg that emanates from that chicken or is laid by that chicken on the first day of Yom Tov is muksim. That's why Rabbi Yehuda believes on the first day you can't eat it. Nothing to do with Mashkim Shizavu. This is against Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of that Mishnah. But rather, the problem is a problem of Muksa, similar to Rav Nachman. For how Rav Nachman explained our Mishnah here by Beit Hillel. It's a Tarnagolet, Haomedet to the Gadel Beitzim. The egg that comes from that Tarnagolet is Muksa. So that's why the position of Rabbi Yehuda is. Now that is not such a simple thing. One of our avid listeners asked me yesterday, why should an egg that comes from a chicken, even if the chicken is designated to be laying eggs its whole life, and it's muksif, why does the egg that comes from it, that's laid by this chicken, why is it considered to be muksif? You're anticipating it. You know that it's coming. Muksif is all about mikatze midato. Either naturally it's out of your mind, or you intentionally take it out of your mind. Here, you intend to eat the egg. You know your chicken's going to lay an egg. But you know it's going to lay eggs every day. And so you want to have that egg. You intend to have that egg. So the Rishonim actually have three different approaches to this. It's not as simple as it seems at face value, because they're right. Why is there muksil over here? So some of them suggest that it's a problem of nolad, which is how we described the problem of muksil here in this case, is a case, like you were just saying, David, it's a case of nolad. Nolad is a different form of muksil that doesn't have anything to do with intent, it's just not there. And when it's not there, you can't do anything about it, because it's nolad. So that's why it's muksil, and this will be a higher form of muksit. There are actually different levels of nolad. We mentioned this yesterday. We had nolad of rain, which is like the most stringent or muksit type of nolad, because there nothing existed before Shabbat, not the clouds and not the rain. You have the lowest form of nolad, which is, for instance, a plate that breaks. A plate that breaks on Yom Tov or breaks on Shabbat, the shards that come away from it, they are nolad, because they were not shards before Yom Tov. But there was a plate there. When you came into Yom Tov, the plate existed. It was just one piece instead of shorts. There's a middle category of nolad, which is the laying of the egg, which is that the chicken was there before Yom Tov, but the item it produced was not there before Yom Tov or Shabbat. And therefore, that is also a type of nolad and a more stringent form of nolad. All right, so that's one answer as to why an egg that comes from a chicken is problematic. The second answer is, you're right. There is no muksa here. The problem here is hachana, and not a problem of muksa. Basically, they're superimposing Rabbah on top of this and saying that it's a problem of hachana. And that's what the issue. The issue is not a problem of muksa, but hachana. And they just call it muksa, but it really means hachana. There's a third answer, which is that muksa is something that's out of your mind, or something that wasn't in your world before Yom Tov, or something that you didn't have in mind to have. Which would imply here, where you have in mind to have this egg, it should be fine. The answer is, you can only have in mind items that exist. You can only demuksify items that are in existence. As much as you want to anticipate this egg coming, you can't take away its shame muksa because it's not there. It's physically not present when you want to take away its shame muksa. And you can't do that. You can have in mind to have something that, a rock, I want to use that as a doorstop on Shabbat, I want to use it as a doorstop in Yom Tov, the rock exists. So you can take the muksa or shame muksa away from it because you make it into something that's utility on Yom Tov or Shabbat. The egg doesn't exist for you to have that in mind to change its status away from muksa. So it's a different nuanced play on nolad, that nolad, which is muksa because it didn't exist. Here, the problem, you can't take away muksa from something that didn't exist. The last point I would make with this is that in their days, remember that eggs that were laid weren't necessarily always for eating. They could be for chicks. Today, we have unfertilized eggs, so there's no chance those eggs can lay a chick whatsoever. So then the egg is definitely for achida. Although then in their day, when an egg is laid, then that egg could be going one of two directions. It could turn into a chick, or it could be used for eating. So therefore, when you don't beforehand make it into ochel, it's not clear that that egg is going to be for ochel, because it could be a chick. So that's why you have to have in mind to use the egg to make it into ochel. Again, you still run into the problem, even if you did have in mind for ochel, the problem here, but the truth is that an egg is not automatically ochel. Today, it might be different that an egg is automatically ochel, because those eggs are unfertilized and they would never make a chick. Now, regards to the nolad, it all happens memelo. Happens by itself. As opposed to, say, the milking of an animal. You milk a cow, or you milk an animal, the Gemara talks about the possibility of that milk being mutar in certain instances. Why don't you say the same thing? It's nolad. It's milk that came out, was produced here by the animal, comes out. So over there, the Rishonim argue that it was done by Yadayim. You are physically taking the milk out of the animal, and therefore there's less muksa involved because you're the one removing the milk. Right here by the chicken lays the egg by itself. You have nothing to do with that process of the egg being laid, and therefore it has more of a shame nolad than milk that is milked out of a cow or out of any other animal. All right, now the Gemara continues and says, Meitevei. We have a challenge to this. Echad beitzah shenolad b'shabbat, v'echad beitzah shenolad b'yom tov, ein mitaltelin ota lo lechasot ba'atakli v'lo lismoch ba'karei hamita, aval kofel le'atakli b'shpil shelo tishaver. And the last piece of that is uspeika asura. If you have a safek about it, it's asura. If it gets mixed up with 1,000, they're all asurot. Now here you have a number of items that are mentioned with regards to this egg. This is an egg that was laid on Yom Tov or Shabbat, basically our case of our Mishnah here in Beitzah, and it's problematic. Why is it problematic? Well, we had four reasons before why it's problematic. We have Rav Nachman, we have Rabbah, we have Rav Yosef, we have Yitzchak, all four reasons. The question that the Gemara has here is, let's look at what this Breita says. Sbraita says that a beitza, whether it's laid on Yom Tov or no laid on Shabbat, ain't mitalti nato, it's muksa, so you can't carry it. Lo lechasot bat a kli, not to use as a cover for a small kli, you can insert it on the top and it'll be a cover. Lo lismoch bakarei amita, not to hold up the legs of a bed. Right, this is the famous thing that an egg is so strong that you can, if you stand it up, as Rashi says, if you stand it up with its point upright, that it could support the bed. You could have four eggs and put them underneath the bedpost and it would stand up as long as the pressure is evenly distributed on top of the egg. Right? If you shift a little bit, it may not work so well, but you could technically, an egg is strong enough, or has enough integrity that it would hold if you put the bed on top of it. But you can't do that. You can't do that because it's muksa. Aval kofel le'atakli. You're allowed to, even though you can't move the egg, you can move another kli in order to cover the egg. Now, that's against the position of Rabbi Yitzchak, which we already saw in the Gemara in Shabbat. We'll see later on in the Gemara in Beitzah as well. Rabbi Yitzchak says, "Ein kli nital ela litzorcho." You can only take a kli for its primary purpose. A kli can only be utilized for its primary purpose. Over here, you're taking a kli to cover up something that's muksa. So now you're in some way ruining the usage of the kli because that's not the main utility of this kli, to use it to cover muksa. Therefore, Rabbi Yitzchak would say this is not allowed. Rabbi Yitzchak will have to explain this breakthrough by saying it's l'tzorach mikomo. The kli that you had, you needed the space where it was, so you picked it up and you moved it somewhere else. Tosafot points out over here, and this is a very important thing, that kli shemalachto li'isur, a utensil that's normal utility is for something asur on Shabbat, or Yom Tov, for instance, a hammer. a hammer that is kli shemlachto liisur, you may not carry that on Shabbat because it's muksif. But l'tzorach gufo or l'tzorach mikomo, you're allowed to move the hammer. The hammer is left on the couch, then you can move the hammer because you want to sit on the couch. You want to use the hammer to smash a nut? You can do that. You can pick up the hammer to smash the nut because that's kli shemlachto liisur. Using it if it's tzorach gufo, you need it for something that's mutar on Shabbat, cracking open the nuts, or you need the place where the hammer is sitting. Now, it's important what Tosfot says over here. Once you have it in your hand, you can put it down wherever you want. It says, once you've picked up a kli shemlachto liisur beheder, once you have it in your hand, don't just drop it. So many times people have a pencil was left on the couch, or a pencil was left on the table. Right, they knock it off and they throw it down as soon as they take it up. Once you're permitted to pick it up for tzorach mikomo or tzorach gufo, then you can take it to wherever you want and put it down in a place that you want. You don't have to just drop it immediately. You can carry it and put it down wherever you want it. So you can pick up the pencil that's on the table. It's kli shemlachto liisur. You need the space on the table. Pick up the pencil. You take it to the desk and put it down on the desk. You don't have to drop it on the floor as soon as you get it away from the table. That's an important derivative over here. Then, last thing is, usfeka asura. If you have a safek with regards to this egg, then it's asur. Here the safek was it late on Shabbat? Was it late on Chol? Was it late on Yom Tov? Was it late on Chol? That's one safek. And the second safek is im nidarva be'elef. If it gets mixed up with another 1,000 eggs, kulan asurot. They're all problematic. Now, Gemara says, bishlamo the rabbo. According to Rabbi Damar Mishum Mechono, that he thinks that the problem here of an egg laid on Yom Tov or on Shabbat is a problem of achana, of his sveke doraito. Talking about a safek mina Torah, called sveke doraito l'chumra. And every safek mina Torah always goes l'chumra. So I understand why you have a safek here, it's a surah. Elo Rav Yosef, for the Rav Yitzvak, Damar Mishum Gzeiro, sveke dorabononi. According to Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yosef, you say, the whole problem that Beitza is that it's a gzera derabonon. Now we're talking about a suffik derabonon. Kosveka derabonon, the kula. Anytime you deal with a suffik derabonon, that is the kula. We go to the lenient side. So why is sveka asura? So I'm going to say, seifa atan the suffik trefa. The seifa, the latter part of that mission is dealing with an egg that is a suffik trefa. So suffik was laid by a chicken that's a trefa or not, and therefore there becomes a suffik deoraita. So they detach the two pieces of the right that we quoted before. The first half is speaking about eggs that are laid on Shabbat and Yom Tov. The latter half is talking about an egg that you have a question as to whether it's a trefa or not. So the first half of that right is talking about a sefek derabanan. The latter half is talking about a case of a sefek deoraita, even according to Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yosef. Iochi, Gemara says, that doesn't read so well, because ema seifa, that's the case, the latter half of that right is yitarva be'elef kulan asurot. That's what it should have said. If you look back, what does the Brayta actually say? It says, V'im nitarva. V'im joins it to the first half of the Brayta, which is, if you then get it mixed up, which implies whatever happened before was the premise for what the next statement of the Brayta was. Over here, it should have started a new section, which says, Nitarva elef, kulan asurot. That's what it should have had. That should have been the question over here. Not the imni tarva, which connects it to the first half of the Brayta, implying that the whole thing's talking about an egg that was laid on Yom Tov or Shabbat. So Gemara says, I amart bishlamo sefek Yom Tov sefek hol habidaber sheishlo matirim. Kol daber sheishlo matirim afilu be'elef lo batio. He says, wait, bishlamo, if the problem here is sefek Yom Tov and sefek hol, then it's what we call davar sheishlo matirim. Something that will be mutar in the future. And anything that will be mutar in the future, we're not going to allow you to eat it today through bittul. So today it's Yom Tov, today it's Shabbat, the egg was laid today. It's asur. If you wait till tomorrow, the day after Yom Tov, the day after Shabbat, you can eat this egg without any problem. Today you want to eat the egg because it got mixed up with another 1,000 eggs? Say to you, don't. Don't eat it through bittul, just wait until tomorrow. Now the way Rashi formulates, this is important how Rashi formulates it, is that since you could eat it after Yom Tov, beheter gamur. After Yom Tov, you can eat it without any questions. Whereas, by Yom Tov, even though it's batel, chad betray, 2-1, mito raita min haTorah is batel, achmur rabban and hovi yeshlo matirim nachar zman, lo yechlenu bi'isur al yedei bitul. Don't eat it in its isur by bitul. What you see from Rashi is a very important principle, we'll mention it again a little later, is that Rashi says when you're mevatel something, there's Isser and Heter together. There are two ways to look at Bittul. One way to look at Bittul is, once something is mixed together, the reality is that the mixture is now Mutar. Mutar the Gamre. There's nothing here that's Asur because it's Batel. Bittul, changes the reality of these objects and makes them all mutar. The other possibility is to view bittul as a hachra. It's a way to deal with the situation. It's a way of psak halacha. That doesn't mean that the egg that's asur or the object that's asur is not still there. The object that's asur is still there. Just the Torah tells you in such a situation, the hachra'ah, the way that we deal with it, or the way we paskin is that it's mutar. So what Rashi points out, and it seems Rashi's favoring that type of opinion in bittul, is that if I let you eat the eggs that are batel on Yom Tov, then in the end you're really eating isur. Even though minat Torah it's mutar, because that's the hachra that the Torah tells you, if it's batel, you can eat it. Nevertheless, it still is isur. And therefore, if I have an option to eat it the next day with total heter, I prefer that you eat it total heter and not use bittul. Even though bittul works, I don't want you to invoke bittul when I have an option that's much better. That's the way Rashi views it. Of course, according to the other opinion where the reality is changed, then you just have to say that the Chachamim preferred that you don't exercise bittul versus doing it with total heter. Even though, again, in both cases, you're going to end up with heter. It's nevertheless the process of getting to heter through bittul. We prefer if you just wait. Why not just wait? What's the big deal? If you wait, then you end up with a cleaner situation. So that's the first step here, which is we have a davar sheish lo matirim. This egg will be mutar in the end. And since it'll be mutar in the end, that's why we have a problem over here. That's why it's not batel. It's not batel because the safek that is generated here could be cleared up the next day, and we don't have to use the process of bittul to eliminate it. So Gemara says, Eliyamart safek trefa. If you think that the egg here is a safek trefa, davar shein lo matirim hu v'tibatel beruva. If you think that the problem here is an egg of trefa, then you have a safek doraita, and there's no matirim. A safek of trefa will never be mutar, because next day, the same safek trefa exists. And the day after, day after, day after, it's always a safek trefa. That means there's no matirim, and it's batel ber rov. So once I have a number of eggs, it should be batel any here, even if it's midoraita. So saying that solution that it's a safek doraita doesn't help you over here, because it's a safek doraita that will not be cleared up. Since it's a safek doraita that won't be cleared up, it's batel be-rov. As opposed to Rabbah. Rabbah who says it's a chana d'rabbah, chana d'rabbah will clear up the next day. So even though there it's doraita, it's still problematic because it's a davar sheish lo matirim. But according to this solution that you gave for Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yosef, that doesn't help you. It'll stay out. It'll be a safek doraita that can be cleared up through bittul. Right, this is the reason. Maybe we'll explain it this way. That it's an egg, but an egg has so much significance that it's not batel. We have this in other items. When certain items are so chashuv, they have independent significance, then bittul doesn't work. Bittul only works when I take a mixture together and everything is insignificant in the mixture. That's why, so there's no differentiation. Since there's no differentiation, then we say it's all one big mixture, and that's why it's batel. But in a case where every item is unique, then you can't say bittul because each item has a significance in itself. Right? It's not become a single entity. That works well according to when it says kol shedarko limanot shaninu. Anything that is sometimes counted, that works well. Elamandamar et shedarko limanot. One who says that that's the only way that it's done is through counting. Ma'ika the Maimar, what are you going to say? So there are two approaches here. We're going to see the Mishnah in a second. I'm just going to give you the explanation so the Mishnah makes sense. Which is, there are certain items that are sold by weight, certain items that are sold by number, certain items that are sold by bundles. All of these items have different ways of selling them. And it happens today, you go to the supermarket, certain things you buy by groupings, by numbers, so on and so forth. So here, but the argument is, when does something gain chashivut? When does it gain its significance in itself, or singular significance? So there's a machloket here. If you always sell it by number, it's clear that it has significance. Because the fact that you are counting out the item means that each one is significant and you're selling it by item. I want 10, I want 5, I want 7. That gives it significance. So there it's clear that it's significant. The question is where sometimes it's sold by number and sometimes it's sold by weight. Which is true. Sometimes eggs, not maybe in the supermarket, but eggs that are sold if you go to the shuk, sometimes they'll take a bag of eggs and they'll just weigh them and they'll tell you, here you go. They're not sold by the number, they're sold by weight. So in this case, the other opinion is that even though eggs are sometimes sold by number, that's enough to give them significance. Even though they're not always sold by number, the fact that they're sometimes sold by number is enough to give it significance. That's a machloket. So according to the one who says that sometimes they're sold by number, eggs are sometimes sold by number, and they're significant, and that's why they're not batel over here. According to the one who says that it has to be only sold by number, then eggs don't qualify for that because it's not something that's only sold by number. There are times where it's sold by weight or by other direction. So that's what the Gemara said here. that it works according to the one. Works according to one who says that as long as it's sold sometimes by number, that's enough to give it significance, then that's fine. According to one who says that it has to be solely and uniquely sold by number, then you can't say over here that the beitza is so chashu, because it's not a beitza, that's chashu. Which is, here's the mission of the Tan. Mishaylo chavilei tiltan, someone who has bundles of fenugreek, shelkil ayakarim, which are surim, idalkul, they should be burnt, because that's what you do with kilei ayakarim, which is asur ba'ana'a. There we learn it out of the pasuk, that you have to burn it. Nitavru ba'acherot, they get mixed up with others. Ve'acherot ve'acherot. And those others then get mixed up with others beyond that. There's some question as to the girsa here. Rabbeinu Tam wanted to take out this girsa of acherot ve'acherot, because then you get trei rov over here, and trei rov would work to eliminate this, even when it's isurei ana, possibly. But Rabbeinu Tam doesn't want acherot ve'acherot to be in the girsa over here. There are others that argue with Rabbeinu Tam. Yitzchok Rabbi Baruch says you could keep it in and just say that the first case was a case where it's mechsa mechsa. They got mixed together and it was 50-50, and then only got necked into the rove afterwards. In this case, kulam idloku, all of them get burnt. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Amim amim, yalu b'chatu matayim. Bittul for kilei ayakarim is 200 to 1, and therefore it should be batel. If there are 200 of the mutar against the one of Isur, then it's batel, and you should be able to utilize it. Shaya Rabbi Meir Meir. Et shedarko limanot, anything that is counted, then it's mikadesh. It makes it kodesh. Kodesh here is used in the other sense of kodesh, which means that it's kilei ayakarim, and you can't be mevatel because the item is too unique or too significant, so there's no bittul. Chamim omeim eino mikadesh, el shisha dvarim bilvad. It only works for six things that are considered so significant that they can't be batel. Vavkiv omeir shiva. Kiva says there's seven items. Ve'eluhein, gilzei parech, nuts from a place called parech, rimunei badan, pomegranates from a place called badan, chaviot stumot, sealed barrels of wine, v'chalfei tradin, and spinach, the leaves of the spinach, kilchei kruv, the stalks of a kruv, udlat yivanit, and these Greek gourds. All of these items are so significant, so special, they're sold solely by the number, and, right, so Rashi says with regards to the kruv, that this is kruv from Eretz Yisrael, that grows so big that's the size of a tree. So he says that they were huge. And that's why. That might be a lot of these fruits here might not only be unique because of the location they come from and they're special, but the size of them. They might have been extraordinary sizes, and that's why they're unique. Or the other possibility is that they're rare, and therefore they're only sold by number. And Rabbi Kiva, Mosif, Avkikorocho, Balabait, homemade breads, are also in that category because they have significance and they're sold by number, not by weight. They're not just commercial type of item. So these items have chashivu because they're always sold by number. Haro'oi, lo orla, orla. Whatever in this list can be grown on a tree, then when we're talking about in the Mishnah here, we're talking about a case of Orla. So that only applies to the Egozim, possibly the Rimonim, and the Chavudot Stumot, and the wine, because those are things that grow on trees, so those three could be Orla. Haroi L'Kilei Akerim, things that could be Kilei Akerim are Kilei Akerim. So that could apply to the wine, it could apply to the bread as well, which is wheat, as well as the Chafei Trad and the Kolchei Kruv and the Kikarot, that are not trees, then they have possibility of being kilei ha-kerem. Those items are kilei ha-kerem. They could go into a vineyard, right? They themselves are not necessarily kilei ha-kerem, but they were planted together in a vineyard, and therefore they take on the properties of kilei ha-kerem because they were mixed in a vineyard. Obviously, the wine itself could be kilei ha-kerem because it was the vineyard that they were planted in. V'itzmar Allah, on this we have a machloket amoraim. Yochanan amar et shedarko limanot shaninu, that Rabbi Meir's opinion when he says, only things that are always done by number, things that are normally, regularly counted, but don't always have to be counted. So Anichler, Rabbi Shimon Lakish, who says that anything that's a normal count or regularly counted, that is chashuv and not batel. So that makes sense over here why the egg is problematic, because it's normally regularly sold by count. Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yochanan, says only when it's solely sold in that way does it become chashuv. Over here, eggs are not solely sold by number. Amar Papa, Haitana, Tana de Litra, Kitziotu. The author of this position, or this bright that we bring by Beitza, is similar to the author by Litra de Ktziot, which we'll see in 1 second. Amar, kol devar shu b'minyan, afilu b'durabanan lo batil. Anything that has a count to it, even though that's not the primary way of selling it, nevertheless, as long as at some point it's done by quantity, that gives it enough significance that it's not batel. Even in a din derabanan is not batel, v'chosh kein b'doraita, and certainly when you're dealing with a doraita level problem. So here we're talking about a suffix treifa, it's a Doraita level problem, then certainly if it's sold by Minyan or if it has any count to it, then it's not Batel. Tetzan. So here is the Mishnah, which is Litra Ketziot. You have this Litra, which is a measurement of Ketziot, which are dates. Shedarsa Pia Igul, that were pressed on top of a circle. The way they used to do is they put the dates together on top of a circle. There was a shaped, almost like pan, that they put them in, and they used to press them into those pans. And then they formed, they basically what comes into the equivalent, it actually says cheese, but it's like a jelly. They become like a jelly, and then later on you have to cut it out. You have to take a saw like cheese. You have to cut it out because it gels together. By the pressing of them together, they become a single gelled unit. Now they do a bunch of these on top of each other. You press the circles on top, and then you put one on top of the next to press them down. So you have stacks of them. Plus, you have a whole bunch of these stacks around. One of these igulim was problematic. The chuma that got mixed up over here. Or, he did it on top of a barrel. He doesn't know on top of which barrel it is. Does it on top of a kveret is usually a hive. But here it means either a basket or some sort of utensil that he would use for this purpose. He stomped it, he pressed it down on top of one of these items. Now he doesn't know where it is. Is it batel, the gabe, the rest of all these pressed figs that are there? So now we know we're dealing with the din derabanan because we're dealing with fruits. Fruits that are not olives or grapes. So therefore we're dealing with truma and masrot derabanan. Therefore we know that he thinks that this problem exists at a derabanan level. So now here's the machloket. Which is Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Rabbi Meir says, this is the machloket in the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ruim et el yonot, kilein and prudot. Look at the top ones as if they're separate. Vatochtonot, balot et el yonot. The ones down below are mevato, the ones on top. Rabbi Shu Omer, im yesha mea pumim. If there are 100 mouths there, yalu. Then they're batel. Vim lav, hamupumim asurim. Then the tops are asur, vashulayim mutarim. Those down below are mutar. So according, let's just explain easier, Rabbi Yeshua's opinion according to Rabbi Meir is simply that you know that you pressed on the top of one of the mouths. So the safek only exists for all the mouths out there, all the tops of these utensils out there. So as long as you have 100 to 1 in the utensils out there, then it is batel. Then since you knew it was done on the top layer, then you have to have 100 to 1 of top layers in order to be mevatel it. That which is below it has no significance here because you know it wasn't in the bottom, it was at the top. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir, in Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, is that even the bottom ones can be counted towards the bitul, because we look at them in two different ways. We look at them as being one amongst many of the different stacks here, but we look at each stack also as being here at the top, and then the bottom also is a part of that same stack, and it can be mevatelet. Even though you know that it was on the top, nevertheless, since they're part of a unit of stack, that stack can help you towards the 100 to 1 you need in order to be mevatel the chuma that got mixed up over here. Then we have Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, im yesha mea pumim yalu. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eliezer is the same as Rabbi Shua of Rabbi Meir, which is that you need 100 to 1 of tops of these stacks or kelim. Vimlava pumim asurim v'shulayim mutarim. Otherwise, the tops are asur and whatever is below is mutar, because you know it's not below. Rabbi Shua Omer, afil yesham shlosh meot pumim. If you have a 300 there, lo yalu, they cannot be batel. Darsa be igul v'enu yudei be igul. Darsa, if he pressed it inside of an igul, and he doesn't know which one it is, meaning that he doesn't know if it's on top, the bottom, anywhere, divrei akol yalu, that everybody agrees there that it's batel. Divrei akol, what do you mean divrei akol? Hainu plukdayu, isn't that the machloka we just had? Remember, Papa Achi Kamar, darsa be igul, he pressed the menu deb eze makom igul darsa. Ilitzvonad edroma, he doesn't know where it is at all, divrei akol yalu, because then the safek involves all of the items that are there. It involves whether it's the shulayim, whether it's the tops, everything's involved in the safek because you have no idea where that eagle is. Since you know where the eagle is, then you can count all of those items against the one item to be mevatel it. So Rabbi Yeshua, Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, will be the author of our Braita by Beitzo, because Rabbi Yeshua, Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, says it's not batel afilu be'elef, even though we're dealing with a din derabanan, and we're not dealing with something that is counted or enumerated in a quantity all the time, but something that on occasion is counted by, done by number. And that's enough to give it significance that it's not batel afilu be'elef. And the same will be true by the eggs. This Tana will be the author of the Braita by the eggs. And the reason the eggs are not batel is because this Tana of Litra, the Ketziot, believes that any item that has any significant placement or separateness is not batel. That's why we say that it's asur. Because here you see, he has a sabek d'rabbanan, he doesn't go to kula. He says sabek d'rabbanan the chumran. We worry about these problems, and it's not batel, even though it's a sabek d'rabbanan. So now, the other thing that Rashi knows here, which has important implications, the halacha, which is Rashi says here, when you have this mixture, for instance, of 200 to 1 by the kilayim, or 100 to 1 here by the truma, what do you do when it's batel? He says, im nitarev echad mehem b'matayim shel heter, yaleh echad mehem. You take one out and you burn it. And then you can eat the residual. So that is a machloket that is found in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya Kuftet, Sif Aleph. Over there, the Shulchan Aruch brings down two opinions. What happens if you have three pieces of meat? Two of them kosher, one of them non-kosher, and they get mixed together. Now it's batel, birov. You should be able to eat all three pieces. So the Shulchan Aruch brings one opinion, you shouldn't eat all three of them together. One person can eat them, but he should just eat them one after the other, not all together at the same time. Then he brings the second opinion, it says, V'yeshomrim, that one person shouldn't eat all three of them, that two people can eat it, but not one person can eat all three of them. And then the Ramah says, we are, the Menoeg B'midinat Elu, is that we are machmir for that shita, that one person can eat all three of them together, and you have to take one of them out. And the Gra says, what's the source for the fact that you have to take one of them out? And he quotes this Rashi right here, that says that when you have bittul, when we saw that before in Rashi before as well, which is Rashi thinks that bittul is not a change in the status of what's there. It's just a way to be machriya, what the halachic status of this item is. So what you have to do is you can't eat all the items here, because you know one of them is treifos. You have to take one out as a representative isur, and take it out, and then you can eat the other two items. But you can't eat all three items, because for sure you're bumping into isur over there, even though bittul permits you to eat them. When you look at each item individually, it allows you to eat it because of bittul. To eat all three of them, that would be problematic. In addition to that, there's also this idea that you have to remove one in order to make the others mutar, and it comes out. One of the sources for that is this Rashi that we mentioned over here. Okay, we'll stop over here.